Hello and welcome into Time Out with Taylor Rooks, now on the SNY.TV audio network. Today's guest is Emmanuel Mudiay, one of the newest New York Knicks, by way of Denver, of course. He is a key part of this Knicks youth movement, as we can kind of see them beginning to showcase the younger talent that's on the team. But most importantly, and above all else, he really has one of the best and most inspiring stories in the NBA. Coming from the Congo with his brothers to join his mom in the States as she just searched for a better life for their family. And he's truly an old soul. And you'll see that throughout this discussion. His head is really just in a different place than most players that are his age. He talks about adjusting to New York City, reaching his potential, speaking French with Frank Ntilikina in the locker room, and also why he is a Miami Dolphins fan. I mean, he's got to get a different football team. But besides that, he was pretty cool. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. But for now, here is Emmanuel Mudiay.
All right, well, welcome to New York, Emmanuel.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, tell me how you're enjoying the big city. It's a lot different than Denver, I would
Definitely
say.
A lot different than Denver. The weather, not so much. I mean, it's kind of still cold. But other than that, I'm loving the energy here. I love the people. New York just brings a different side out of you, so I'm loving it.
Different side how?
Like I said, energetic. I'm more so chill, nonchalant, but you kind of got to, how can I say it, feel more outgoing, and you kind of, everything's so fast-paced, so you just got to have a lot more energy into everything that you do. You can't be just slow and mellow.
But do you like kind of adapting to that here?
Yeah, I can say me and New York people kind of have the same type of mentality. Even though I'm chill, but as far as like everybody here is kind of aggressive, so mm-hmm. I'm kind of the same way, but in a more like chill mentality way.
Yeah, I would say though that kind of nonchalant chillness isn't really how you are when you play.
Nah,
it doesn't come out in that sense.
Not necessarily, but at the same time, kind of the pace I play with. I mean, sometimes I'm smooth with the ball and stuff like that, so it's. You got his pros and cons with when I'm aggressive and when I'm kind of still in that smooth kind of mentality, too.
Smooth so. With the ball, okay.
Yeah, so that's how I look at it a little bit.
What are some of the biggest differences between living in a place like Denver and coming here?
Like I said, faster pace. It's like night and day. Difference, you know, everything here is on top of each other. Bigger city type feel. A lot more people. You see a lot more people just walking around. So, if you've been to Denver, you can come here and you would definitely be like, because Denver's so chill too. Mm-hmm. You know, people go there for skiing and stuff like that. So it's definitely a difference.
But it's weird because I think in some ways people kind of sleep on Denver.
Yeah.
Like it's a nice little
in what
city.
Way though?
Like there's some good food places there. Yeah. It's a chill little area.
I mean,
like,
but
it's not like Oklahoma City.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah.
But I mean, but a lot of people are moving into it's like one of the fastest growing cities right now. So. Like you said, it got its pros too. Sometimes it's cool to, you know, just relax and chill out. Like you ain't gotta be fast paced all the time. So, but at the same time, it's like, if you're gonna do something, there's not too much to do out there. Here in New York, there's a lot more to do, you know, a lot more. You can get into fashion and stuff like that. So a lot of stuff going on over here.
Yeah, because I said, you're just very cool today.
No, I'm chilling.
I was like, okay, we got the nice little hoodie, mixed it up, the athleisure thing.
Yeah, the sweats and the hoodie, that's pretty much it.
But this to me is like a very Cali look. Maybe it's just because of the shoes.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I see my brothers, they're into fashion too. Steph, the oldest one, he's pretty into fashion. So I'm kind of gravitating towards that a lot more. But like I said, I still do it in a chill way. Mm-hmm. If I do it, it ain't got to be jeans all the time.
So right.
I like doing it with sweats as well.
Who dresses better? Who's the best dressed brother? Now, by the way, one brother is in here. So this
yes,
is a very...
Yes. he knows more, so okay. I'll say, as of right now, he is the leading candidate. But I'm making my way.
Okay, you're getting there. Yeah.
I'm in the right city, so I got an advantage.
You
too.
Are.
So yeah. I mean, he's in LA, but New York's the fashion, you know,
Did you get to go? Well, I guess you weren't here when Fashion Week was really going.
That's when I got traded.
Yeah.
But I mean, we kind of like left that week, so I really didn't get to experience too much.
Mm-hmm. So what's it like? Okay, you're just in Denver, chilling in the chill city.
Yeah.
Time to go to New York. What is the first thing that went through your mind when you found out you were about to be in it?
I mean, I'm gonna tell you the truth. It was kind of more like I felt like I was supposed to be here from the beginning because coming out, I got drafted in 2015. New York, I think, had the fourth pick. They made the right pick. You know, they went with Kristaps. They got Porzingis. But a lot of people thought that I was gonna come here. I thought I was gonna come here. But then now that, you know, it happened in just 3 years. So, what, 2.5? But the fact that I'm here now is just like, I felt like it was meant to be. Denver was more so, you know, learning experience and stuff like that. So, and still, you know, I'm still young, still learning. But when that happened, I feel like I received more congrats texts that day than I did when I got drafted.
Yeah.
Or when I had a big game or something like that. So, it felt good, you know, and I saw a lot of people showed a lot of support. You know, the fans here, they really, you know, they want it so bad, and I want it so bad, so it's a good thing.
So, I mean, what was it like? You said you knew you wanted to be in New York, but it just isn't what happened. Like, what is that like, you know, just kind of your mindset when you really want to go somewhere and that's not where you end up? And you're not thinking, hey, years down the line, I'll end up there.
Yeah.
Was it a disappointment for you?
No, I look at everything kind of in a spiritual way. So I was just like, you know, it's God's plan. He wanted me there. So after I went there, I wasn't over. I mean, so many people trying to be in the NBA, so you got to count your blessings at the same time. You can't be ungrateful. That's kind of how I was looking at it. I was still grateful. I got to go start right away, play a lot of minutes right away. So, you know, like I said, I've never been to Denver when I went, though. The only difference was, like, cities that had the first couple picks, I've been to every city but Denver. So it was kind of a different transition in that aspect.
Up until what moment did you say, okay, I'm not going to New York? Like, did you not realize it until they said Kristaps' name?
Yeah. That's
really?
I think nobody, because we had an idea going in, like, on draft day. It was, like, between 2 and 4. Like, that I was projected from, like, 2-4. But, like, after that, after Kristaps went, that's when it really hit me, like, I'm not going to New York. And now it's like, let's see where I end up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was it like, I guess, kind of going through that process, dealing with New York, dealing with the other teams? Because at that point, you were dealing with Phil Jackson still.
Yeah. Exactly. I didn't know what was going to happen. So, obviously, you're there with your agents, your family, and stuff like that. So, they let you know kind of what's going on. And they kind of told me, like, they're going to take Kristaps. And, I mean, when that happened, I was just like, all right, let me just see what other teams. I think Sacramento or Orlando and Sacramento had the 5th and 6th. I went 7 to Denver, but
yeah.
No disrespect to, like, Sacramento, but I was just like, I've never even experienced Sacramento either. So it was like 6 and 7. I didn't know where I was going to end up.
Yeah.
So
it's so crazy because even when you're watching the draft, you're seeing, like, all these people on the phone, all these people talk. I can't imagine, like, what is going through your mind when you're figuring out your fate, essentially.
Right. It's kind of, you just wait for your name to be called. The fact that you're in the room itself, you kind of already is, you know you're going to get drafted. I mean, most people, they kind of have an idea that they're going to get, and you got an idea, like, where you're going to go. But when I dropped, I was like, man, hopefully I'm still in the top 10 and stuff like that. So I didn't work out for Denver. Never been to Denver and nothing. But Tim Conley, you know, who I got major respect for, who's the GM over there, he took a shot on me, so it was pretty cool.
And now you said that for you, Denver was a learning experience. What do you feel like you learned?
I feel like when I first got in the league, well, actually my whole life, I've always been, you know, pretty good at what I did, so it was kind of, I worked, but at the same time it was given to me too. Like, certain things were like, you know, since you're so good already, here you go, like, there you go. And coming into the NBA, you're playing against the great players. You got Steph, LeBron, KD, you know, stuff like that. So they had the same kind of experience of, like, everything was handed to them, but they worked for it. But it was just everybody got different routes. You know, I went from starting to, you know, wasn't playing as much and stuff like that. So I really looked at it as a different outlook, and it just made me grow so much as an individual. So at that point, I was like, man, you can't ever take nothing for granted. So it made me just a better person.
Yeah. And I feel like even, you know, coming to New York, the whole thing with everyone was, okay, this guy has so much potential. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, he's going to get to New York,
yeah,
and we're all going to see it.
Right.
And he's going to reach it.
Right.
Is that the feeling that you have with it, too? Like, this is almost a year for you to just keep getting closer to that ultimate, you know, Emmanuel?
Right. Like I said, I'm taking it one day at a time, but like they said, you know, I can see the potential in myself now more so of just hearing it. So sometimes I'm like, okay, you can do this. Like, you can do this. Just trying to make it consistent now. So mm-hmm. Still a young player, still figuring out some stuff, but, you know, and seeing it from other people that they have so much faith in you and stuff like that, you just don't want to let them down. Mm-hmm. So you want to go out there and just play as hard as you can every night. And just be a good, you know, citizen and stuff like that as well,
yeah,
off the court as well.
Right.
A lot of people don't understand off the court is a major fact to what translates to the court.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just want to do great in all aspects.
Yeah, and what ways? Talk about kind of that off the court aspect.
I mean, just helping. I'm a big person, you know, giving opportunity to, because I didn't, you know, me and my brothers growing up, we grew up pretty tough. My mom, you know, she raised us by herself. Three boys, you know, our father passed when we was young. Well, all of us was young. So just seeing individuals that, you know, are struggling, especially in a single parent home, like I can kind of relate to that. So just talking to them or trying to help them as much as I can, giving back any way I can. So I just love doing that.
Yeah, and I always think it's so amazing. It's something I talk about on the podcast a lot, is just, like, representation. Like, mm-hmm. sometimes if there is a kid that is in the same situation that you mm-hmm. were in, when you were younger, just seeing someone like
right.
you
yeah.
and saying, okay, well, this is where they are now. And
right.
that just means so much, and it makes you feel like you can reach that, too, even right. when sometimes it doesn't feel like you will.
No, for sure. And even when I was younger, there was people that used to come talk to us, and sometimes you're like, man, that'll probably never be me, or sometimes you're like, I hope I get there, but you never know. So you just got to be really paying attention to other people. And one thing I'm big on, I always hang around, like, majority of the time, older people, because they can basically give you wisdom and basically tell you, you know.
All the old heads.
Yeah, kind of what to do, what not to do. So that's real helpful, too. So I think that's kind of why I'm so chill at the same time, because I'm not kind of into what a lot of people my age probably are into.
Okay, what are you into?
I'm an old head, basically.
I mean, like, are you sitting, like, reading newspapers,
no,
playing
not like
cards?
That, but
or what
I'm
you
more, I'm more like, I don't have to be around a lot of people to have fun or,
yeah.
like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not clubbing. That's really not my thing mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Like, I enjoy company and stuff. Like, I'm not saying I'm not approachable, but mm-hmm. at the same time, I just feel like certain things I don't need to do to have fun.
Yeah.
So just basically try to do the right thing at the same time. And in my, it's funny because in Denver, I really didn't have too much eyes on me like that. I had eyes on me. You always have eyes on me. But here it's just a whole bigger
type of,
you know, everybody's looking at what you're doing and stuff like that. So, like,
everything you do
yeah,
will be
nah, for sure.
Scrutinized.
For sure. Yeah, so.
I hope they have warned you about
nah,
that.
Nah, everybody's told me that. So at the same time, I don't look at it as a bad thing either. I look at it as, if you're doing the right thing, then good things going to be, you know, said, or I'm just going to be myself, really, mm-hmm. at the end of the day. I'm not here to try to be somebody I'm not, basically.
Yeah. I do kind of get the sense, going off what you're saying, it's more that, like, your head is just in a different space
yeah.
than probably people
right.
your age.
I mean, I would have been a senior in college right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And they're still doing college senior
exactly.
things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and I'm that's not throwing them under the bus. That's basically, I guess, what you're supposed to do at that age. But mm-hmm. I just always had to mature pretty fast. Me and my brothers, like I said, my mom, she always installed in us, you know, faith and just, you can't live your life kind of just recklessly, really. Everybody's looking, so that's how I always been.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you have alluded to this a bit, but just for the listeners who maybe don't know, can you kind of explain, like, growing up mm-hmm. and it's Congo, correct?
Yeah.
Or just kind of explain what that was like, what you went through, what your mom, I know she ended up moving to the mm-hmm. U.S. and waited for you guys to come,
yeah.
so just tell that story if you can.
Yeah, I was pretty young. I was born in Congo. I moved when I was 5. So it was definitely, from what I remember, a transition, major transition, you know. I didn't. Funny thing is, in Dallas, Dallas is so big, I thought that was the whole United States when I was younger. So Texas, I should say.
Yeah.
I thought that was the whole United when I was real, real little. But, you know, as I got older, I was like, okay, this is, there's more states and stuff like that. But yeah, my mom, she came over. She really came to the States for education purposes for us, me and my brothers. She wanted us, you know, get a better education and stuff like that. She wasn't even thinking basketball. She was just more so, y'all gonna come, get y'all degree, and, you know, just live a good life. But she ended up leaving. We was away from her for like a year and a half, I believe. And then after that, it was tough. You know, I'm the one who always wanted to be around my mom. Steph was older. He was kind of like the father figure already. So, like I said, that's where, and John Michael, I think 2 years younger, so he was like 11. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's your other brother.
Yeah, that's my middle brother. So, like I said, we had to grow up so fast, but it was just a different transition. You not speaking any English, because our first language is French, so you just going into a whole different world. And as I got older, I mean, I'm kind of skipping ahead, but as I got older, when I went to China, it was an easier transition because I've already done it, you know, because I've
been out of that element.
Exactly. I had to come to, so that's why I was super comfortable going there too. But yeah, mom, she, you know, worked a lot. She worked a lot. We really didn't get to spend time with her. As when I was younger, she wasn't coming to a lot of games. So she was always kind of the motivation for me to, you know, get her in a better situation. And so she can see all of us grow how she intended for us to grow.
Yeah. Okay, now go back for 1 second, because you did skip ahead to China.
Mm-hmm.
What happened between being in Texas and China?
I was blessed enough to be able to, you know, play basketball. So I grew up watching my brothers. Those are the people I always looked up to. So I grew up watching them. Steph was pretty good. John was pretty good. They both had injuries. Both had the same injury, actually. But so after that, I was just like, man, because I thought they was going to make it as well. Mm-hmm. So after that, I was like, you know, I got to just put myself to the side as far as just sacrifice and try to make it for everybody. That's kind of my mentality. That's what it was. So like I said, I grew up there. I love Dallas. That's home. I have major love for it. I always go back during the summer and try to help out as much as I can. Like I said, you know.
Cowboys fan?
I am a Cowboys fan, but not surprisingly, I'm a Dolphin.
Get off the podcast.
who you like? Falcons?
Falcons. What?
Nah. Did we beat y'all?
No.
No, okay. I'm just but I'm really surprisingly.
Let's calm down.
Look, I like the Cowboys, but my favorite team is actually the Dolphins, which is pretty weird.
Why? Yeah.
Yeah. Because Ricky Williams.
Okay.
Yeah. When he went to Texas.
Big Ricky Williams fan.
When he went to Texas.
I'm hoping all of his business ventures take off.
So when he went to Texas, I was a big Longhorn fan. Like, I wanted to go there and everything. So I love Texas Longhorns. So I used to watch them, and he used to always kill it. Then Vince Young came.
Okay.
So I used to watch them. So I've always been Cole McCoy, all them. So I've been a fan.
I can respect that.
Yeah.
I can respect that, even though you should go like a couple states up to Georgia and like the Falcons.
I don't know nothing about Atlanta like that.
I mean, like, besides playing the Hawks, like, have you been to Atlanta?
If it's not basketball, no. And
so
I probably,
sad you're missing out on like the best.
I was talking about Atlanta with somebody the other day, and I was like, I'm not a big fan of Atlanta.
But you don't even know. You've only gone to play the Hawks.
Sometimes you just get that vibe.
You just know?
Yeah, sometimes you like, this just ain't for me.
I think you would like it because if you're looking at the major cities, you know, I would say, what, Chicago, New York, L.A. I'd put Atlanta in there, Houston.
Is Texas a major city?
Well, wait, Houston or?
That's in Texas. Houston. Yeah, cool.
I'd say Houston. Oh. But Atlanta is, I think, the most chill of the major cities. And if you're looking for a place, it's like,
I don't,
chill.
Did you put Dallas in there?
I put Houston, but not Dallas. I don't know.
Houston's not chill. Houston's
no,
not
but
chill.
I'm saying it's one of the major.
No, I'm saying, You can say L.A. is crazy, but chill, too.
But it's crazy, though. I don't think Atlanta's crazy.
But people go to Atlanta to have a good time, though.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I'm not a fan of you not liking the place.
Yeah,
so
I'm being real with you. How people view it.
Yeah.
That's where you
But found. I feel like you think that it's like the Migos. They're just running around everywhere.
That's not. But it. People,
and it is like that. I'm not saying it's not. But it,
pros and cons.
Yeah.
So, maybe I gotta go see what you're talking about.
It's a great place.
The food is all right though.
All right.
It's the South. It's good.
I read somewhere you love chicken. It's like if you love chicken, you should be in Georgia.
Or
soul food.
I mean the South, period.
But Georgia is like.
Yeah.
I guess I'm the only person. To me, Georgia is like the Southern.
You feel like that's the South.
Yes. Though. Like that is where all Southern things.
I can agree to that to an extent.
Yeah.
To an extent. Yeah.
Okay. One day go, let me know what you think of it, and yeah. I think that you will have a complete...
Different outlook.
Yes, it's go to visit. But you did speak on something that I think is really interesting. So you speak French.
Yes.
And you speak fluent French.
I speak fluent French, but at the same time, since I moved, since I was really, really young, it takes me... I got to be speaking to somebody that speaks French.
So I was going to say, are you and me, Frank Ntilikina just speaking French?
Yeah,
in
me and Frank speaking French.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and like... He'll talk to me in French, but if it's like I gotta think too fast, I'll respond in English though. Like I really gotta sit there and think before I can respond in French.
Really? Because it wasn't something you were doing as much once you.
Yeah, but my mom, she speaks French to me all the time. Like that's how she always speaks, so I don't forget. So she'll speak French. And it's funny because sometimes she'll speak English, and I'm like, why are you speaking English to me? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't speak English to
right.
me.
Right, so, go back.
Yeah, so, yeah. And everything. So when she speaks to me like that, that's just how we communicate.
So, okay, because I will hear Frank, like, speaking French to the French reporters that are always mm-hmm. there. Because now there's so many French reporters at the Garden. Yeah. Sometimes I'm just like, what are y'all saying?
Yeah.
This may be a good quote, and I don't know what y'all are talking about. Yeah. Like, it's just, but it sounds so pretty. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a very, very pretty language.
Yeah, man, you can't talk to girls like that, man.
Use his French?
Yeah. They think they'll just fall in love? They go crazy over that, though. It's the truth.
Like, hearing that other language, you're like, oh, that sounds nice.
It's the truth. So you kind of got to keep that in the back.
Is it? Oh, and it only comes out sometimes. I feel you. You got to know your game.
Yeah.
I feel you. So is it easier? Like, for example, I've heard people say that English is the hardest language to learn because the rules are so, like, they're not consistent.
Right.
Like, some words... Mm. Are the same two like letters together, but you say it differently than
where.
Right.
Right. I think it's tough to learn, but for me it was pretty easy because I was young, so like I picked up words so fast. So I go to school, and I just hear it and I just pick up on it. But like somebody from my mom, so when she moved here, she was older, so she graduated college and all that. And they teach you like English. I feel like they teach you English everywhere in the world,
mm-hmm.
but. It's just it's different when you in America. Like it's more so England like type of English that you learn. I feel
mm-hmm.
like so when you're in America, it's a lot different.
Yeah.
But for me, it was pretty easy picking up because I was young and I just started first grade.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty easy.
This probably seems like a really weird question, but are you good at math?
No.
Okay, because I've heard, like I'm not either.
That's my worst.
But I've heard people say that people who can speak more than one language also tend to be very good at math.
No.
Because I guess it's kind of how your brain.
That is.
Doesn't apply to you.
That's not me. I'm a history guy though.
Really?
Yeah, I like history.
What is your era or place or time? What is your favorite?
Around Muhammad Ali's time.
Like okay.
When he was doing all the civil rights stuff.
Yeah.
That's my favorite athlete of all time. So
Cassius Clay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's anything around that time, that's where I really like figure out a lot about America history and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's funny, like do you feel like your view of American history may be different than others because of the lens you're looking at it through? Like the people that mm-hmm. you're studying. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I feel like, for example, you know, at school for me, it's like we're learning about American history through, like, you know, Abraham Lincoln and, like, these presidents. But if you're wanting to learn about American history and you're looking at it through somebody like Muhammad Ali or Jim Brown, like, you're seeing it from a different perspective than I would think the mass is.
Right. I mean, I kind of don't know how to follow it up with that, but I think it depends on, like, the individual that you're studying, mm-hmm. basically. So, like Martin Luther King, him, Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, they kind of going to have the same type of story
yeah.
that you look at Abraham Lincoln or some of the presidents or whatever, it's going to be different as well.
Yeah.
So I think it just depends on who that person is.
No, for sure. And that's one thing I would say to my sister. It's like, you're going to, things will have a different story based on a different perspective.
Exactly.
So I think it's so important for people to want to know about history, right, and learn about different figures and why they did this. Like, I think in years, people will view what happened with Colin Kaepernick a lot differently than they view it now, just because narratives continue to change as we go through time.
But the reason why I look at history so much too is because it always repeats itself.
True.
So like, and a lot of people don't like to believe that, but it's so true. It's just the timing is different. Like what's going on is different, but it's already happened.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. Yeah, I think that's so really interesting.
I think kind of seeing how they handle stuff back then and seeing how it's handled now is kind of seeing how they handled it differently, basically, is what I'm saying. So
yeah, no, I read a quote once. It was like, the biggest lesson of history is that men don't learn from history.
Yeah,
and that's very true.
Basically,
yeah, it's very very true. But so this French speaking duo on the Knicks, which I'm gonna like get like Rosetta Stone, so that when I'm there, I'm like, okay, I know what they're talking about now. But it's funny and it's cool that you guys are able to be so close and have this relationship, because when you came, the whole thing was like, what are we going to do with Moutier and Ntilikina on one team? How is that going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that when you got here?
Nah, I think that was more so the outside. As soon as I got here, me and Frank, we clicked.
Yeah.
I mean, he's around my age, too, so, and this is his rookie year, and I'm just 2 years removed from my rookie year. So everything he's experienced and what he's going through, I can kind of like tell him this is how I handle it, or this is how somebody told me how to handle it. So, and I'm still learning. It's kind of helped me on kind of leadership type of thing.
Leadership, air quotes.
Yeah, but I mean, so, and he's helping me without him knowing he's helping me, you know? So that's somebody that I see me and him like just growing together. And it doesn't hurt that, you know, I think he can feel more closer to me just because we speak the same language already. He's coming here from France, you know, he doesn't know nobody here. Like, he just told me his mom was here, but she left. So now he, like, you know, he's kind of on
his
own.
He's like, be my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make him seem like that. But he cool, though, man. That's my guy.
Yeah.
Like, so he's just trying to figure everything out. And he's kind of going through what I went through as far as transitioning to another country.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the funny thing is, he speaks real good English, though.
Yeah.
Like, he understands everything.
Mm-hmm.
His accent's not, like, that strong as you would think.
Mm-hmm.
And he's figuring it out.
No, for sure. Because that was the whole thing. It was, you guys were going to be able to complement each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were going to get the young guys playing and everything. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you guys are complementing one another?
Yeah, I mean, it's still early, too. But
yeah.
I feel like, it's funny, though, because when you play sports, just being cool off the court can get you to connect on the court. You know what I'm saying? If that makes sense. So, like, me and him, just us talking French, like we said, we just feel like we can connect on the court as well. So it's actually helped, too, like just communication level or something like that. So we're both just going to keep working and try to get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, we've talked a lot about the reaction of when you were coming to New York and what a lot of the fans thought. And I think that, as I've said, it's really hard to watch you play basketball and not think that you just have this immense ceiling. Like, I think anybody who watches you is like, he's talented, he's athletic, all of these different things. But it's funny when you think about the different situations in basketball, maybe a different fan base may view you differently because of what they viewed you and that team.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, do you think that we as people sometimes give up on athletes too quickly? Or kind of create an opinion on them before we have allowed them to show us what they can do?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that my mom always talks to me about. One day somebody can say, oh, you're doing this great, you're doing this great. The next day they can switch up right on you. So the main thing as athletes that you want to try to do, though, is be consistent. So if you're consistent, nobody really can, you know, say too much about you. You're going to have some good games. You're going to have some games where shots just aren't falling.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know what you're about. You know how to, you know, get over that. But at the same time, it's just about, with us athletes, it's about staying tunnel vision at the same time. You really can't worry about what's going on the outside. But as fans, I would say you do got to stay patient as well. But I mean, sometimes when you haven't won in a while, you know, you're ready for your team to win, you kind of just like, come on, we need you to do more. So I understand, like, I've been a fan of basketball as well. So growing up, I used to look at some teams like, yo, why is this not going on? But when you're in it, it's a lot different. And it's also about just opportunity, too. Like, some places just
in your situation.
It's situation, exactly. Like, some place just might not be for you. Like, you can work as hard as you want to, do everything the right way, but that's just not where you need to be. So you've seen so many players on one team, it's like, man, what's going on? They leave, they become an all-star. I'm not saying, I'm just saying that
in general
though.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just how it is.
Yeah, it's all about situations. People underestimate, like, you being in the place that is going to set you up for success is a very big part of
like basketball. A perfect example is, he's like one of my biggest mentors is Chauncey Billups.
Nice.
Like, he bounced from team to team at a young age, got traded like his rookie year, like 55 games in, and he went on like 3-4 different teams, like through that for every year, like, and he finally landed in Detroit, and his career just solidified there in Detroit, champion, and like, you know, finals MVP, 5-time All-Star, like stuff like that was just happening for him. And the stuff that was happening for him on other teams, saying, people were saying, oh, he can't do this, he can't do that. He got to Detroit, he did everything that people say he couldn't do. So it was just the right place for, like, right place for him over there.
So what kind of, like, advice does Chauncey give you about that? What does he say to you that kind of sticks with you?
Like I said, you got to stay tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Like, you got to believe within yourself. But the thing I believe that hurts athletes, too, at a young age is that they get discouraged so fast, like, and especially when you got everything, you was a McDonald's, McDonald's All-American, you know, all that, like, if you don't believe in yourself and know what you're capable of, I mean, and it's tough. Some people, they'll read them comments, you know, they'll
social media has made it way worse.
They'll let them, you know, I've heard some crazy things, but I just laugh at it sometimes.
What's the craziest thing you heard about yourself?
Man, people would say, I hope, you know, you get in front of a bus and get ran, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like, okay, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Whatever.
Whatever.
Like, yeah. You had a bad day.
Yeah.
But that don't affect me. And then, you know, like you said, you have some fans that really show their love and support. So, and sometimes it'd be those same fans that saying, oh, you this, you that. 3 years later, they're like, man, I was wrong.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure. So in New York, for you, what is going to be like a successful New York tenure for you? What are you looking for in yourself while you're here?
Just keep growing, keep getting better as a player, for sure. The goal right now, we're so young, but the first goal is, you know, trying to get some more wins, get to the playoffs. You know, if I'm blessed enough to be here long enough, just try to get a championship. So that's what everybody plays for. But like I said, man, I'm not going to look too much into, and that's one thing I did in Denver too. I look too much into, man, when is this going to happen? When is this going to happen? You know, so you kind of just got to stay the course and take it one day at a time.
Yeah.
I think when you do that, it helps you a lot more.
I deal with that too. I've heard it called like destination addiction. Like, I'm always thinking, okay, what's next and how do I get there and why am I still doing this if I'm trying to get to the next thing? But I think that you almost hurt yourself if you keep yourself in that mindset.
Well, for sure.
But before we get to Twitter questions, I wanted to ask you about this because I just think it's so interesting. Talk about the decision to go to China and how you think that kind of helped. Did you ever feel like you missed out by, you know, not having that experience?
No, I kind of look at it as, I mean, not missed out. I just feel like I came out of high school, really, because I went professionally. I was getting paid for what I, you know, wanted to do. I mean, it wasn't about the money. The money was more so for my mom. Like I said, I wanted my mom to be in a better situation. She was working all the time, and it presented itself. You know, God blessed me with the opportunity, and I talked to her about it. We talked about it, prayed about it, and I was just like, that's the move to make because, like I said, coming out of high school, I was projecting, you know, one of the players to come out, one and done thing and do all that. So I was like, why not just go over there and play against grown men, kind of physically get ready. At the same time, my mom's in a good, you know, situation. She's living better and just grow from there.
Yeah.
So when I made the decision, it wasn't too, I mean, it was a difficult decision, but at the same time, it was like, I feel like this is the decision. I don't regret it. And yeah, I stuck by it. I still stick by it.
Yeah, as you should.
And the funny thing is, people always, now they keep thinking, man, I want to go overseas, but I'm scared to do it. And I wouldn't say it's for everybody. You know, you got to, your mind, your mentality got to be a lot more, like, you got to be focused, like, because you're away from everything, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
You're away from everything, like, that you're comfortable with.
So. I mean, I do sometimes wonder, though, especially, like, with all the stuff that goes on with the NCAA now, mm-hmm. why kids who know they're going to go to college, do 1 year, and get to play basketball, rightfully so. Like, if you know that you want to be a basketball player, you know, why are you in school? Like, I'm a person who thinks, A, athletes should be paid, and B, the NCAA has almost created a culture that encourages mm-hmm. caring more about the sport than school.
Right.
And you're almost doing a disservice by making a kid go to school. Right. But I wonder why more people don't decide to take that route.
Mm-hmm. I think that's on the individual, whoever that is. Like, I'm seeing right now, the NCAA is stuff right now. It's crazy what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing. But at the same time, people shouldn't have to, like, feel like they're hiding that stuff. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like you said, they shouldn't have to hide it. Like, if they're good enough, like, you know they're good enough. Just let them go, be one of the, I think players in college should get paid. Mm-hmm. So
I think most people do, even if they don't admit it.
Exactly. So, I mean, because people, they just been, like, if your jersey's in there, you're not getting nothing for it. I feel like they should benefit off that, too. So. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to, that's another whole different conversation, but, and I'm not going to speak too much on it because I went around this, I didn't do it, you know what I'm saying? I didn't go to college, so I can't really defend it too much because people, I can't relate to some of the stuff they're going through, mm-hmm. so, but yeah, I think, like you say, if you're good enough, I think they should just go ahead and let it happen. But at the same time, it's like, it can also, you know, I don't want to say ruin a kid's chances, but let's say a lot of kids decide, oh, I think I'm good enough, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You can't go back to college, you know, so you can't play in college no more. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to figure out what type of rule they're going to come up with.
Yeah.
So it's because I feel like a lot of kids at this, especially in this era, they're going to think, oh, I'm ready. Mm-hmm. And you're not as ready as you think.
For sure.
Yeah. So.
And I also think there's a fear, because I remember thinking this, like, about you going overseas, it's like, I would be like, what if people forget about me?
Right.
You know, and that probably is such a dumb thing to think because scouts, they know what's
happening. It's not dumb. It's not dumb. It's not dumb, but at the same time, like you said, if you're good enough, they'll find you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I had scouts coming to my games and stuff like that. But, like I said, if I didn't have my high school name and stuff like that, it would have been a lot. Like, I would have been like, okay, I got to go to college.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, but overseas, and it helped me in so many ways too. I had a great time over there. It was sometimes where I was like, man, did I do the right thing? But then it was sometimes like, nah, this is what I was supposed to do because I kept looking like, my mom's is good. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was always like, all right, I'm not tripping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has certainly worked out for you.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out.
All right, Twitter question time. Let's see what we've got, Chia. You
know,
you gotta scrolling. Shuffle through these.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Gotta shuffle through the Twitter.
That's what I love. There's some crazy stuff on there.
Well, someone said, did you believe the Knicks were gonna draft you in 2015? Which you answered.
Yeah, I did.
How much of an influence did J. Mike and Stephon Marbury have on your game?
Steph Marbury?
Yeah.
Not you. But
your brother's name is Steph.
Yeah. But yes, Stephon Marbury, he helped me out. You know, he showed love, especially when we would play him. He'll kind of give me advices and stuff like that. Kind of like Chauncey, how he does it, just tell me how the league is, and you know, he helped me out in that aspect.
Okay, very nice. I actually think he's like back right now. Because one of our anchors did a segment with him yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's in New York.
This was his last year playing too.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Hopefully you get in the Hall of Fame.
What is the most challenging about being in the NBA, knowing you have no college experience and having to overcome obstacles overseas before entering the draft?
Most challenging?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say in China, the thing that was challenging coming to the NBA in China that, you know, the coaching was kind of a little different because, you know, language barrier. Great. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a great coach, but, you know, some things just didn't match up because I didn't understand what he was saying. So maybe the coaching, you know, that I was getting didn't kind of, like I say, nothing against them, but it kind of didn't translate to the coaching that I was kind of playing off of just pure talent up there,
yeah.
You know? So, but like I said, he was just trying to tell me as best as he could, you know, in English, like, okay, this, that, like, do this, do that. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, some stuff, you like, basketball is your universal language, like,
yeah.
You pick stuff up. But as far as, like, sitting down with you, like, going through film and stuff like that, that was probably the thing that was hard to translate, because when I got here, I had to, like, kind of start that over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And probably different also just words that
exactly.
coaches use. Why did you choose your number, or how did you choose your number?
0 or 1, because not...
Yeah, that's what they're asking, because they said... Yeah, let's see. I was just trying to shorten it.
Yeah.
They said, because why isn't he number 0, and why did he choose 1?
Yeah. Well, it was for another reason. I don't know. I just wanted a new number. But there is a reason behind 1. I'm a spiritual guy, so I, like, nobody's, like, greater than Jesus. So that's mm-hmm. kind of why I wear it. And that's, like, my who I play for, you know, and stuff like that.
Okay. So. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, have you had any conversation with Kristaps Porzingis since he's been injured?
Yeah, I talked to him when he, you know, he had his, because he got injured like 3 games before I got here,
mm-hmm.
which that's, dang, that's wild. But, yeah, I wish I got a chance to play with him earlier. But, yeah, we texted when he had his surgery and stuff like that. I checked up on him. I haven't seen him yet.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, we've been gone. He's laid up at the house, so
was that such a bummer for you, like, coming
yeah,
here
man.
And then
it's like you're super happy, still happy, but it's like if he was playing, you know, it's like
yeah,
I
sure.
wish he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
He was having a great year, all-star year, yeah, we communicated, so we've talked a little bit, and I'm pretty sure, you know, we'll get to the funny thing was draft night or draft, like when you come to the lottery, like hotel, like, you know, we stay at the hotel. Funny thing is, he was the room right next to me.
Really?
Yeah. So
look
that's
at
the,
that.
Yeah, that's the first
Fate.
Time. Yeah, that's the first time I ever had a conversation with him.
Very nice.
I asked him. I remember. I was like, "Where you want to get drafted at?" He was like, "New York." I was like, "Me too." I was like, "All right." So, you know, he got drafted here, and like I said, it's been great for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, he'll come back stronger. I'm pretty sure.
Well, you were fantastic. You were very good.
What, today?
Yeah.
Oh, appreciate it.
For sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I know you weren't a huge fan of the media, so I was like, we don't know how this is going to go.
Nah, it depends who I'm talking to.
I got you. Hey, I feel you. But no, you were great. I'm happy to have you in New York.
Thank
you. Had a great game against the Warriors.
Thank you.
Wish y'all pulled that one out.
Yeah, man, we got to start getting some more wins.
Yes, so. For sure. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And welcome to New York.
Thank you.
So for me, the most inspiring part of interviewing Emmanuel was just the relationship that he has with his brothers. I mean, even talking to him before and after the interview, every single big moment of his life has incorporated his family. He measures so many moments by their relationship, and it's amazing to see them just be so close. And I also realized that it's important not to write people off early. Basketball is so situational, and you can't be defined by year one or even year two. You have to develop, and you have to find the right opportunity. And I hope that that's what Emmanuel finds here in New York City. So thanks so much for listening to Time Out with Taylor Rooks. Like, subscribe, and leave a review. Until next time.